the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It's an amazing story. The New York Times, the style section on Sunday, headline, Can Boys Wear Skirts to School? Can a boy wear a skirt to school? Just think about the question. It's a fascinating issue that has arisen in public schools across the United States, not only public but also private schools, but the controversies in the public schools, where you have boys dressing as girls and girls dressing as boys. It's pretty flamboyant stuff. You're talking about girls wearing clothes that make them look like male gang members, according to this story in the New York Times. You also have boys dressing up with lipstick and makeup, wigs, showing up in girls' clothes. It's a fascinating and very troubling development. Jan Hoffman, writing in the New York Times, reports that high schools have had very specific rules about clothing. They've had to develop these. Boys are forbidden to wear muscle shirts and saggy pants. Girls cannot wear midriff-exposing tops or skirts that are too short. But the schools are pretty much at a loss to know what to do when a boy shows up trying to follow the girls' rules and a girl shows up saying she's following the boys' rules. Hoffman reports, in recent years, a growing number of teenagers have been dressing to articulate or confound gender identity and sexual orientation. We're going to be talking about this. Some people want to make it a civil rights issue. You've got the ACLU and other groups involved, school district by school district, different kinds of rules coming down. An interesting development out of this is that the press for school uniforms worn by both boys and girls is partly driven by the exhaustion of schools trying to deal with this. You know, as Christians, we can find many, many questions. Some of them are visual. I had a mother talk to me the other day about the challenge. She said, I have to know how I think through talking to my children when we're in the park and we see two men holding hands or two women holding hands. How do we talk about that? The visual prompts the necessity of a conversation. Well, I guarantee you that the visual of a teenage boy dressed up like a girl sitting in math class is going to create some conversation. It's going to create some conversation in the classroom and then outside of the classroom. By the way, Kay Himowitz of the Manhattan Institute, she's been a guest on this program. She says, and I think this is obvious, it's hard enough to get students to concentrate on an algorithm even without Jimmy sitting there in lipstick and fake eyelashes. That's an attention grabber. But we're dealing here, obviously, with human beings, with these young people, and the clothing is a testimony. It's a pointer to a far deeper problem, a far deeper confusion than about dress. And we're going to be talking about that today on the Albert Mohler Program. If you haven't confronted this yet, you will. If this hasn't arisen as a matter of controversy in your community, it will. This story indicates that there are about 1,200 gay and straight alliance clubs in high schools across America. They are actively sponsoring and encouraging this. You have faculty advisors who are now becoming intermediaries in this. And this is the weird and bizarre part. You have parents that are demanding that their children be free to bend the rules about gender and dress. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. If you go to my website at albertmohler.com, you'll find the article entitled Boys Wearing Skirts to School, What's Going On? Let me just tell you what's going on. It's a whole lot. Worldviews as well as dress and clothing options are on display here. Everything's at stake. It's all in play. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. 877-893-TALK. The news out of Texas is that there will be criminal charges now against Army psychiatrist Major Nadal Malik Hassan, 13 counts of premeditated murder. The report has also come out of the U.S. Army Criminal Investigation Command that the government will be seeking the death penalty in the case of this murderous rampage at Fort Hood. The nation is still trying to recover from this just in terms of dealing with it, not only in terms of the grief of the aftermath of these families, but the tragic reflections of trying to establish the meaning of this. In that light, very interesting article appeared in the Wall Street Journal by Dorothy Rabinowitz entitled Dr. Phil and the Fort Hood Killer. Now, on this program for the last several days, I've tried to point out that one of the things we need to watch is moral evasiveness. It's frightening, actually, to see how many people want to shift the moral responsibility from the man who did these things to why he did it, finding some excuse, some therapeutic explanation. I was not watching when Dr. Phil appeared on television to give his explanation of this. But when, for instance, Major Hassan's Muslim identity was mentioned, Dr. Phil, according to Dorothy Rabinowitz in her article, was outraged. And he went on and tried to describe this man as a victim of deployment of the army, of the stresses of a new kind of terrible war, unlike any other, unlike, can he have meant, she asked, the kind endured by those lucky Americans who fought and died at Iwo Jima, say, or the Ardennes. That's reference to World War II and World War I. Dorothy Rabinowitz is coming back saying, look, you know, there is no doubt a terror associated with war. But we're talking here about something that is very different than what happened during World War I or World War II. We're talking about a war that certainly is unique in its circumstances, but it's not unique in its terror. It's certainly not unique in its murderousness. It's unique in that it is taking place in Muslim lands. And we now have Major Hassan's own word for the fact that he was animated by that concern. We now know a whole lot more in the background. We know about a presentation he made to former other soldiers just in recent years, in which he pointed out that Muslims should not kill other Muslims regardless of the uniform they are wearing. And, of course, those are strange words to be coming from one who's wearing the uniform of the United States Army. So there is a lot to unpack here, but I really do appreciate what Dorothy Rabinowitz is doing here when she's pointing out that there are those who just want to shift this kind of responsibility. And whether it's Dr. Phil or someone else like him, there are persons who are just immediately going to jump to a psychotherapeutic explanation. I want you to note something very carefully. That kind of psychotherapeutic explanation is intended to relieve persons of moral responsibility. And that can be very convenient when you want to relieve yourself of moral responsibility. It can be very convenient when you want to seek to remove the moral responsibility of someone you know, someone you love, or someone whose guilt would be very, very awkward in the case of, for instance, Major Hassan. But it unravels civilization. There is no way that you can live in a civilization and maintain order if no one is responsible for what he does. We just empty out the jails, and we are no longer able to speak of right and wrong. We cannot say that anything is evil. We can simply say that everyone is sick. The late Philip Reif years ago spoke of what he called the triumph of the therapeutic, and he said the one thing we now know, that Americans know, is that we are all sick. Unfortunately, that doesn't get us anywhere. That simply does not deal with the realities of the moral crises before us, and in particular, an act such as this murderous rampage at Fort Hood, Texas. We'll be following this story with you. Speaking of other things we need to follow, the Washington Times is out with one of these genuinely disturbing stories that catches you by surprise. A San Francisco cosmetic company is now including an unexpected ingredient in its anti-aging creams. And remember, this is an American company. We've been talking about the fact that this was taking place in Europe, but heretofore, it had not been in the United States, but now a San Francisco cosmetic company is using skin cell proteins from an aborted fetus. The company, Neocutis, acknowledges that the key ingredient in its product line was developed from an aborted boy. And that is really, really frightening. Neocutis, by the way, defended the use of its trademarked ingredient, which is known as processed skin cell proteins, or PSP, in its anti-aging product, arguing that the fetal cell line was harvested in responsible, ethical manner for use in treating severe dermatological injuries. I want you to think about those words. They're arguing, and this is using the kind of clinical language, which, like the therapeutic evasion we saw with Dr. Phil, here's a scientific evasion. You do not use the words that make clear you've derived these cells from an aborted baby boy. Instead, you say, as the company did, that the fetal cell line was harvested in a responsible, ethical manner. Now, here's something we have drawn attention to in the past. I hope you're watching this. When people say that something was done in a responsible, ethical manner, I tell you what, all kinds of alarm bells go off in my mind, because I find when you look under the surface, when someone says that, it often is not ethical, and it certainly is not responsible. What people mean here is that they used these cells from an aborted baby in a way that they then carefully define as being ethical. What does that mean? That they didn't steal the cells from another laboratory? In other words, if you get to determine, just as a matter of your advertising and public argument, what's ethical and unethical, well, you can get away with this. It is very, very interesting. By the way, a spokesman went on to say, our view, which is shared by most medical professionals and patients, is that the limited, prudent, and responsible use of donated fetal skin tissue can continue to ease suffering, speed healing, save lives, and improve the well-being of many patients around the globe. You know, very interesting. By the way, the cells came from the ingredient developed at the University of Lausanne in Switzerland. We now know it was protein in the skin tissue of a 14-week-old baby boy, electively aborted at the university's hospital and donated to the Swiss University. So now we're getting a better idea of what ethical means in this context. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Fascinating story. You know, when you see the New York Times Sunday Style section, I mean, generally it's about fashions and what's coming, and you know, frankly, not a part of the paper I pay a whole lot of attention to, but it really caught my attention on Sunday because it has a picture of teenagers on the front, living color, who are engaged in what's called gender bending by their dress. And you've got young kids, you're talking about 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, boys dressed up as girls, girls dressed up as boys, and with all kinds of permutations in between. Jan Hoffman, writing at the New York Times, reports that this is really stressing out high schools, trying to figure out how to deal with this, with the rules. Dress has always been a controversial issue. In high schools, you could go back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, different kinds of rules. Lately, the big issues for boys have been saggy pants and clothes that look like they're associated with gang activity. With girls, the big issues have been exposing themselves, both in the midriff and in terms of miniskirts and stiletto heels. Those are outlawed simply as a lethal weapon and considered unsafe. So, you know, the rules are pretty much how long is the skirt and how much skin is showing. Well, what happens when the skirt's being worn by a boy? There's some really weird stuff in this article, and nothing weirder than the way the article ends, by the way, because in this case you've got a teacher who is talking about what goes on in his school, and what goes in his school, which is in Columbus, Ohio, is that there's a boy there named Jack who wears girls' clothing and dresses up as a girl, and he says, one day I heard a student say, man, there was a girl in the guy's restroom standing up using the urinal. What's up with that? And another student then quipped, that wasn't a girl, that's just Jack. Well, you know, this is an age now of confusion. And the clothing is revealing the confusion. That's the bottom line. My article published today at albertmohler.com entitled Boys Wearing Skirts to School, What's Going On? I begin with a quote from James Laver, famous costume designer, who said, clothes are never a frivolity. They always mean something. They do. They always do mean something. How we dress means something. We choose intentionally to say something by how we're dressing. Now, we're not going to let this go without talking about why, from Christian conviction, this is deeply troubling. One of the things that the Bible makes clear is that God is glorified when males are males and females are females, and you can tell the difference even visibly. And yes, the Bible does talk about that. The Bible talks about that in the Old Testament, very specifically in the New Testament, in 1 Corinthians 11. You know, Paul makes an argument rooted in nature in the fact that you should be able to tell the difference. And a man should not disgrace himself by dressing as a woman and appearing as a woman, nor a woman disgrace herself, of course, by appearing as a man. Now, in every age, you know, different issues of taste and custom certainly apply. But, you know, the reality is you go to virtually any human culture at any time, and there's a difference between the way that males and females dress, men and women, boys and girls. But we have so embedded a sexual confusion in the heart of our culture, a confusion over gender and whether gender is God's gift or some kind of mere social prison, we've embedded so much confusion that it's showing up now in what kids are wearing to high school. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. So here's the issue. What do you say to this? You get parents together, and the parents say, some of them are going to say, I think this is just ridiculous. We just need to draw a line in the sand. Let's have a policy that says this can't happen. Boys have to dress like boys. Girls have to dress like girls and within appropriate parameters. Then others are going to say, no, these kids have a right to express themselves. Or you get the argument based upon sexual orientation that it's actually discriminatory and wrong. It's oppressive to tell a boy he can't be a girl. And by the way, some of these kids are showing up saying, not only do I want to dress as a girl, you refer to me with a feminine pronoun now. And here's my new name. And going vice versa with girls as boys. So the more interesting part of this story seems to be the boys appearing as girls. And the reason for that is actually mentioned in the article, because the fact is that just to state the obvious, most adolescent boys are pretty intent on showing their males. And fairly nervous about anyone having a question about that. So when you have boys showing up wearing wigs, makeup, lipstick, frilly pink scarves, and mini skirts, boy, you got a lot to talk about. Kay Heimowitz, who's of the Manhattan Institute, quoted in the article, just states the obvious, and I really love the way she puts it, because she sets it in a context we can all understand. She says it's hard enough to get students to concentrate on an algorithm even without Jimmy sitting there in lipstick and fake eyelashes. So let's say your kid comes home from school and says, guess what I saw? What do you think about this? You know, folks, again, the visual in this postmodern culture is often prompting the unnecessary explanation. You see something, you have to explain it. You see something and the kids say, all right, what's that all about? You know, how do you explain that? What should we be thinking about that? At one level, we can have this discussion simply as secular people trying to have a secular discussion on secular arguments. That's not what we're really about. I'm glad to have any argument made, and to make it, just give me a call at 877-893-8255. But the particular question of our responsibilities, how should Christians think about this? You know, and by the way, when it comes to our own, and then when it comes, of course, to the larger issue in the public square, I can tell you, and I want to speak very carefully here, there is a real confusion going on. I see young men, Christian young men, evangelical young men, deeply committed to the gospel young men, who are dressing in a way that's described as emo. They're kind of bending the categories. Some of them are wearing girls' jeans. Fairly scary thing to me, frankly. Let me just point out that I can guarantee you that this dad would not allow that to happen. That's just not going to happen. I'm glad to say my son has shown no indications whatsoever of wanting to do that and is probably very nervous that I even suggested the possibility out there. But the reality is, thankfully, that's not something I've had to face. But if I did have to face it, I can tell you I know what the answer would be. A boy wears boys' clothes. A girl wears girls' clothes. Not just because I'm a cultural conservative, but because I believe there is a biblical principle at stake that to deny the difference between male and female is actually to deny the Creator the glory that is his due. Let's go to Violesia calling. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. Calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Go right ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say I don't understand why principals feel like they need to compromise on this issue with cross-dressing. The fact of the matter is we all need rules, and if you're going to compromise on one area of that, then they should go ahead and let young ladies wear stiletto heels and, you know, reveal themselves. You can't just cross out one thing and then compromise on another.
Yeah, I really appreciate the call. And I'll tell you, Violesia, one of the reasons why some principals are intimidated about doing this is because some of these students are ready to show up with a lawyer to make legal claims about the fact that it's discriminatory. I'm not buying that argument. I'm just telling you that we're living in an age in which parents who should be showing up to apologize for their kids and say, I guarantee you he's going to be obeying the rules from now on, are increasingly showing up, not only in this kind of case, but in many others, of school discipline and saying, look, you put my kid in detention, you suspend my kid, you take this punitive action, and I'll sue you. That's a larger issue, and frankly, it's a part of the ethical sickness of this society. You know, I'll tell you what happened when I went to school. My dad said to me, you get in trouble at school? I guarantee you, you're in 10 times more trouble at home, young man. And I knew he meant it. So I stayed out of trouble in school. You know, I may have missed a whole lot of stuff in life in terms of lessons I should have picked up, but I was smart enough to pick up on that one. I knew my dad wasn't going to show up with an attorney to say I'm taking the kid's side. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The controversies have arisen in interesting ways. For instance, girls who have attempted to wear tuxedos for the school portrait and have been denied and then have gone to seek legal action. Boys who are trying to show up dressed as girls in class and to present themselves as gender bending with evidently a small army of adults who are ready to celebrate that. We're talking about it. It's caused enough of consternation that the New York Times, yeah, that's right, the New York Times, this is the nation's paper of record, in its Sunday Style section, is saying, look, this is a real challenge for schools. And one of the interesting things is that as much as the New York Times is just avidly pro-homosexual in terms of that agenda in every conceivable way, it acknowledges in this Style article that it's a real challenge for schools to figure out how to handle this, because it acknowledges that schools are about learning and there are limitations to just how much, flamboyance, gender bending, attention getting kids can get away with, and learning still happen. I just love that quote. I've already used it a couple of times here on the program from Kay Heimowitz, who says, look, you know, getting kids to learn an algorithm is hard enough without having Jimmy sitting there with the lipstick and fake eyelashes. I guarantee you, that if that happened when I was in high school, I think we'd still be talking about it. I'd certainly still be remembering it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Beckley, West Virginia. Rhonda's listening on WWNR. Go ahead, Rhonda.
Okay, I'd just like to say that I believe that a lot of the influence of why they're doing this has to do with the TV shows, the pop songs, the artists, how they dress, and what they portray.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and this kind of emo look is something that came from the culture, and it came from artists in particular, and the cultural observers say it really goes to musicians who were presenting themselves that way, and then it bled over into the television culture, especially a lot of the youth programming that is directed towards adolescents. You know, I'll tell you the truth, Rhonda, this really confuses me. It confuses me because... I don't understand what they're trying to say. I fear that when we get a hint of what they're trying to say, it's a real cry for help. I think that's where you're going to have a great divide in this country between people who say, look, it's just kids with self-expression, and on the other hand, those who say, you know, there's a kid looking for help. I think it's the latter. Let's go to Sherry calling from Borden, Indiana, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Sherry.
I disagree with Albert just on the fact that we should be more focused on what is in our minds and hearts and not so much what's on our bodies.
Okay, Sherry, I'm willing to go with you a little bit on that, but don't you think that what's going on here is a reflection of a deeply troubled heart when you got a boy that's trying to show up dressed as a girl?
That's exactly right, and we should focus on the heart and not what's on the outside of the body, because I think that's part of the reason why people are so focused on the outside today instead of the inside, because they keep making it an issue. We should start where the problem starts at.
Okay, well, Sherry, I kind of want to agree with you at one level, but I just don't think that works. I mean, you do want people to wear clothes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But there is times when I will wear my husband's T-shirt, or if you're going in to buy a flannel shirt or some other piece of clothing, you can't always tell if it looks like a man or a woman, and I don't think we should classify everything exactly that way. I think we should be just more focused on making sure that the individuals understand what the purpose of that clothing is.
Okay, Sherry, let me ask you one last question just to make sure I understand the argument. So when, for instance, the Apostle Paul says that a man should look like a man and a woman like a woman, how does that factor into your thinking?
I understand and I agree completely, because I think that it has to do with the fact that we want to cover up the appropriate parts. And I wouldn't believe in risque clothing, I don't think it's so much defining between man and woman, but having respect for the parts and knowing what they're for and covering them up appropriately.
Yeah, I'll tell you honestly, I think you are avoiding what the Apostle Paul very clearly is talking about there. And by the way, he also makes a reference to this with hair, saying that you know, woman's glory is her hair. And again, it's because he makes the argument that God is glorified when a woman looks like a woman and a man looks like a man, and you'll be able to tell the difference. The Old Testament law, by the way, was built in the same principle. And, you know, I think just about everyone realizes there's a problem here. And, Sherry, you are absolutely right to say the heart is far more important. That is fundamentally right, good and well said. But if you're a school administrator, you're going to have rules. And the question is, what kind of rules are you going to have? And some of the rules are going to deal with what you talked about in terms of covering parts. But as this article makes clear, that's not where the rules can end. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program, and we'll be right back with more.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about the New York Times Sunday Styles headline article, the very front page of that section of Sunday's paper, dealing with the question, can a boy wear a skirt to school? And the whole gender bending controversy in high schools. And the fascinating thing here is that the context is exceedingly secular. Talking about a secular paper dealing with the secular public schools, and they don't know what to do with this. In my article published today at albertmueller.com, I point out that Christians have a particular issue in this because it's about the glory of the Creator in the man being male and the woman being female. And understanding that that difference is not mere social construction. It's a matter of the glory of God. And in every culture, at every particular stage, there are considered appropriate and inappropriate ways of demonstrating that. And when you intentionally defy that kind of category, the gender bending here is intentional. It's not that these kids are impoverished and, you know, the boy can't wear anything but girls' clothes because that's all they have. That's not on the horizon here. This is a choice to make a statement. And we're getting the statement. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Springdale, Pennsylvania. Gabriel's listening on WTLR. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Yes, I think we as Christians need to be careful we don't blur the lines in our own ranks on this issue, on the dress issue.
Yeah, I agree with you. What do you have in mind, Gabriel?
Well, I mean, 100 years ago when ladies started wearing slacks, it was a huge issue, and there was a lot that felt like that was perverted and outrageous.
Yeah, you know, that's a very interesting point, which by the way, could get us into an entire week of controversial radio here. But, you know, women wearing slacks, women wearing pants. And you're exactly right, Gabriel. When that first started happening, it was an intentional gender-bending exercise in its own context. With the argument of safety, by the way, which is very interesting. The argument was made that women in certain situations needed pants as a matter of protection and safety. And yet it spread, and certainly in the 1920s and thereafter, there were some very interesting debates over women's dress having to do with slacks. I think in the culture where we are now, just trying to be as honest as I can be as an analyst in this, it's not just the fact of whether they're pants or not. I'll tell you the reason why. I'll just tell you, I think women wearing a skirt or a dress very clearly and straightforwardly make clear that they're feminine and female just by that dress, because men do not wear skirts or dresses insofar as we do the same thing trying to show God's glory in being male. There are other things like T-shirts and pants and jeans where I don't want to use the word androgynous, but there is no fixed gender category for some of those things. And for that reason, I think I'll just put it as honestly as I can put it. I think a woman who is wearing clothing that is not clearly feminine just has an additional responsibility to make very clear to present herself in feminine and female ways, visible ways. In the total context, I think that's the most responsible way I can think about it. and put it. And, you know, for men, we're in a little easier category here, but that's why our closets, generally, men have smaller closets than women. The options are just not so many. The costume is not quite so important. But when it comes to the choices we make, the dress, we understand they really are revealing a signal we're trying to send. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Stephanie's listening on WTLA. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hi, good afternoon. Relative to the clothing issue, would a heart that loves the Lord want to bring chaos to a situation by dressing inappropriately?
You know, that's a very interesting question, Stephanie. I'll tell you, to get inside the worldview of these kids and their supporters, let me tell you, they contextualize their own understanding of what they're doing as liberation. So they would justify what they're doing, how they're dressing, by saying that they are liberating sexual orientation, they're liberating themselves from oppressive concepts of gender, they're liberating themselves from cultural conventions that they think are restrictive and unfair. So, Stephanie, the amazing thing is that the motivation of this heart, actually, like the motivation of many whose cause is, I believe, wrong, is justified in their own mind. But, you know, what would undercut that is where I go with my article from the Christian perspective, and that's what would God think. And, you know, if we're just conjecturing a God, then we can come up with a God that thinks whatever we want him to think. That's a pretty usual human exercise. But as Christians, we're obligated to believe in the Bible as the Word of God, where God tells us exactly what he thinks of matters, of all the matters of crucial importance to us. And certainly in the Bible, God tells us he cares about gender. He cares about the fact that he made human beings as males and females. And that he is glorified when his human beings accept all his gifts in the right proportion to his glory. And that means to celebrate being male or female, not as a cultural abstraction with men beating their chests and shouting and women presenting some kind of false femininity, but the real kind of biblical masculinity and femininity being displayed, not just a matter of cultural convenience or custom, but for the glory of God. Thanks for your call, Stephanie. Let's go to Fritz calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead.
Yes. I wanted to point out that in 1 Samuel it says that men judge by the outward appearance, but God judges by the heart. And I think it's precisely because men judge by outward appearance, right or wrong, they do, that we as Christians need to be so careful about what we wear because it will communicate something.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I really appreciate that. And it reminds me of someone saying that that he didn't care about dress. He refused, he said, to dress according to social conventions. This is a young guy. He told me, he said, I just refused to obey anybody's rules. But, you know, when he actually had to apply for a job, he managed to shave and put on a clean shirt. And by the way, if he wants much of a job, he'd have to put on more than that. Very, very interesting insight there. Men do judge by the outward appearance, and that's because, well, here's a sad thing. This is just a part of a fallen world in our finitude. Sometimes the outward appearance is all we get to know. It's all we get to see. And we are advertising all the time by the way we dress. We're trying to say, this is who I am, this is what I believe, this is what I hope for. We're signaling that by the way we dress. This is what I'm here for. This is who I am. And we all know that. That's, by the way, why I heard a description the other day of a young 20-something male. It said that it took him 20 minutes in the morning to make certain that his hair looked adequately unkempt. Yeah, that's a way of advertising, too. We'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Very quickly, let's go to Chris calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, sir. I'd just like to point out that this problem needs to go back to where it began. You know, children are a direct reflection of their parents. And so if their parents can't control them or teach them right, that's how it's going to end up.
Yeah, you know, a very interesting point, Chris, as again, the reversal that's taken place, where parents would generally have been the first line of defense against this happening, and with very clear rules that took place at home long before the kid got to school. And now there really is a complete reversal in that. As many school administrators will say, when the parent comes in with a kid, the parent's coming in to take the kid's side on almost any kind of issue of discipline or rules. So that tells us a great deal. And, Chris, you're taking it back to a very important source. A very similar point made by Joseph writing in by email saying the real problem with adolescents is parents who do not take responsibility for the actions of their children. Yeah, and I will tell you, there's not only actions here. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Joseph. It's also their hearts. I would be heartbroken for a child sending this signal of trouble. And it would be about a whole lot more than clothing that would be my concern. From Facebook, we heard from Tim, who said, here in Maine, the Augusta School Board ruled that a boy in upper elementary who believes that he should have been born a girl was granted permission to use the girls' restroom and locker room. This is utterly ridiculous and is one of the many reasons that my wife and I have chosen to homeschool our children. You know, the dress issue, as I said, the visual often requires an explanation, and this is especially so with children, but not limited to children. As I said, the mother walking in the park sees, you know, the child sees two men holding hands and says, what's that? Are they married? You know, what, how does that work? What do we think about that? The visual prompts that. Well, the visual is becoming such a distraction that, again, the significant thing, first of all, here is that the New York Times considered this worthy of the front page of their Sunday Style section. It's that big an issue. And what we're looking at here is the fact that we know clothing is always about more than clothing. And not only are rules at stake, hearts are at stake. And not only are regulations concerning dress and social custom at stake, but worldview is at stake. And, of course, we knew that already. Because from the Christian worldview perspective, we know that any of the big important questions that would reach this kind of controversy, they are getting at the very heart of where Christian truth intersects the way we live. And the big issue, of course, for Christians is not merely what kind of rules should we have, but how would God be glorified? What would we be missing if we confuse this issue? What are we covering that God would have to be visible just in terms of his glory in making us as male and female? Very interesting questions. We'll continue the conversation. Always feel free to write me at mail@albertmoeller.com. And, of course, we'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Moeller Program.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.